You're listening to a Comics XF podcast.
X-Men. Get it!
Hey everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Battle of the Atom. This is your, what do we call this thing? Clairvoyant X-Men podcast. We read every story from A to Z.
And I'm something of a scientist myself, Adam.
You know, I got so freaking mad at the Tom Holland Spider-Man movie that everyone was like, oh, this is good. And I was like, actually, I think this sucks. It was for little stuff like them being like, and look, I'm referencing a meme. I did think it was funny. I did think it was funny when they made fun of the Amy Pascal email leak about Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. That was a good joke.
Sure.
But it also should not have been in a movie that went out in theaters to everybody. That's an insane thing.
There was a great post that I saw that was going around today about the quality of the cinematography in No Way Home versus the cinematography in the movie that we have decided to base our episode on today. And it was really funny because, like, clearly there was some pandemic choices made to, like, film some stuff in front of green screens that, I don't know, it just looks terrible. So anyway, Zach, we have a one-of-a-kind
episode. I'm Zach, the Bad Boy of X-Men podcast.
Oh, right. Jeez, I should have let me. You do that.
It's okay. It's okay. I got distracted by being mad at Spider-Man Homecoming, No Way Home, whatever one. A bad movie and something that everyone should have been mad at. And instead, wow, you were all like, oh, look, Alfred Molina's back. Don't we love this?
It. I thought it was fine. I still don't really have the animosity that you do for it, but I get why you're angry about it. But you should be much angrier at a much worse film.
Hold on. No. No, I don't get angry at movies that are bad and everyone says are bad. I get angry that movies are bad and everyone's like, oh, this is so good. And I'm like,
oh,
you're stupid. There's only one person in the world who has told me that it's a good movie. And that's friend of the show, Connor Goldsmith, who, more power to you. I've never watched this movie and I will not pay $20 to watch Madame Web.
I have seen Madame Web. I will not reveal how. But I did see Madame Web, and
Adam, I just want to know.
Yeah,
East Coast movie theaters. What's a ticket and maybe a popcorn and a small drink go for total? Just a solo experience. Popcorn, movie theater, first run.
Yeah, minimum 20, I think, you know,
because minimum $20.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably paying about 10 bucks for a ticket, even for a matinee. And then, you know, honestly, the popcorn always costs you, like, you get popcorn and soda. It's crazy. They charge you like 16 bucks. It's nuts.
It's insane. And then you get to watch Madame Web.
Whew. Wow. Madame Web. Quick review time. Terrible movie. It is really long. It feels long. You know, it's a 2-hour movie and I have never checked my watch so much. And every time I checked my watch, I could not believe how much movie was still left. It was so bad. But this week, as promised from last week, we are doing a Madame Web themed episode. I am very excited about this.
So here's the thing about doing a Madame Web themed episode. It's that I'm not going to get into what it was, but I saw what was supposed to go on for next week. And I just told Adam, but I'm not in the mood. Can we do anything else?
Well, this kind of happened. I promise too.
It happened as a joke at one point when I told Adam I was going to make him do a Madame Web episode when he was so mad about the movie.
No, but last week we were trying to schedule some stuff out. We knew that there was a Juggernaut story in an upcoming episode that we had thought we were going to cover. And then we like realized, no, this works. Like, this does work. We can actually make this happen.
It works because we get to define what works on this podcast. And I could imagine that others would argue with
me. No one is going to argue with us. Everyone's going to be very excited about this episode.
I'm hermetically sealed. No one can interact with me.
You know,
it's such a beautiful life. This is a one-way conversation to anyone besides my good friend Adam.
Yeah. And, you know, we know, folks, what we're doing here, because we know that when you take on the responsibility, great power will come. You know, I learned that from Madam Web.
Did you? I've only learned one thing from Madam Web, and that is that her web connects us all.
Oh, boy. Well, Zach and I have spent the last week in the Amazon with our moms researching spiders, and
right before she died.
Yes, right before she died. A line that does not appear in the movie, which is a crime. But
wait, I'm sorry. They do the "I'm something of a scientist myself" line in this movie too.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Screw you, Madam Web.
Zach, you have to understand that Tahar Rahim, who plays Ezekiel Sims, is literally 80-yard for, I would say, 98 to 100% of the entire film. Like, they literally overdubbed him for the entire film.
I'm looking at quotes from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Maddie Franklin says, "Hey, Cassie, sorry we're late. It's a jungle out there. Had to beat an old lady with a stick to get these wontons." That's a quote from other Spider-Man. And Cassandra Webb says, "What about my mother? Did you give her a chance? Did you?" Which is also a quote from Spider-Man. Stop quoting 2022's, nope, 2002's movie Spider-Man. A movie that, hey, I'm going to get real controversial.
Oh, no.
I'm going to get real controversial.
Oh, no. Is this a hot take? All right, go ahead.
My hot take is that Sam Raimi's Spider-Man isn't very good. You were just what? 11. I was also just 11. I understand. Adam, I've rewatched it. It's not a movie in so much as it is an unrelated series of scenes.
Oh, come on.
It's a bad narrative. It's a bad movie.
Zach.
It's not very good. They still haven't. They've made two good Spider-Man movies. They've made two good ones.
All right. Tell me which ones. I'm assuming Spider-Man 2 is on your list.
No, it's Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse. Those are the two good Spider-Man movies they've made.
You're saying that Spider-Man 2, yes. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2 is a bad movie?
I'm not saying it's good.
Oh, Zach, come on.
I'm not saying it's a good movie.
Dead heart over here. Come on. Listen, here's what you need to do. You can't
even be like, Zach, you're being reactionary. I was 13 when Spider-Man 2 came out. You think I didn't go and watch that? You think I did not have the Sunkist that had Spider-Man 2 on it? It came out on my birthday, Adam. My 13th birthday. You think I was not the core demographic for Spider-Man 2?
I know, but like, you can't
featuring J. Jonah Jameson's son, John Jonah Jameson, the werewolf man.
You can't go back and watch that and have fun with it. It's a blast. It's really fun. They're both good. Come on. Listen, you need to gain some perspective. You need to start a marathon with Madam Web. You know, watch this chronologically. And then you get to the scene where they're not allowed to say Peter Parker's name, but his mother is having the baby shower and they're having a game on what the name of her baby is going to be.
That sounds
absolutely insanity from Sony. What are you doing?
That sounds terrible. I know that it's like a common thing to make fun of, but it is truly insane how much money the PlayStation people have thrown at not Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. And we haven't even gotten them all this year. We still have a third Venom and a Kraven movie this year.
There's never going to be a Kraven movie. That movie doesn't exist.
I've seen the trailer.
I keep forgetting. You know there was a New Mutants trailer for 4 years before it came out.
It's true.
All right, honestly.
We should get into this because we do actually have some stories connected to the movie, starting with the titular Madam Web, who makes her first on-panel appearance in the story we are going to start off with from Amazing Spider-Man 229 and 230. Nothing can stop the juggernaut.
It's Roger Stern and it's your boy, JRJR, John Romita Jr. Have you ever been to John Romita Jr.'s Instagram where he's just in like sleeveless tank tops with his massive guns being like, "And I'm drawing Spider-Man today. I'm John Romita Jr. Tell your mother."
he's ripped. He is keeping in shape. God bless. And he's being inked here by Jim Mooney. So we're still in kind of like a house style. We're not quite to JRJR style yet.
It doesn't. I can see it. I can see the John Romita Jr. Yeah. in him.
Yep.
But it is not him yet.
He's not there yet. Still really great page layouts. And this story is so much fun. I loved it because it is Black Tom deciding that he needs to capture a psychic who happens to be Madame Web, who we should probably talk about who she is in a second, but he basically just sends Juggernaut off of their private yacht to go kidnap her. And it's two straight issues of just the Juggernaut walking through crap. I love it so much. If you love Black Tom and Juggernaut, you got to check out this story if you haven't already.
Hey, do you know who should have played? Do you know who should have played Madame Web if they wanted to be comics accurate?
Oof. Well, you mean current Madame Web or the original Madame Web?
I'm talking about the original Madame Web. No one cares about current Madame Web.
Well, we'll get into that.
It's insulting that Marvel keeps putting her in comic books. look at me. I'm young. Hey, why are they turning all the crones into hotties? Why are they doing that?
Zach,
give me a crone.
You do know who the new Madame Web is, because it's not the same
person. It's Julia Carpenter. Yeah. She lost her eyes in like one of the Kraven stories. I don't know. I don't read Spider-Man.
I don't either. I just looked up the wiki.
It's just they haven't done a good Spider-Man since the 60s. It's really
who are you thinking about? Which star are you thinking for Madame Web?
Rosemary Harris, 95-year-old Rosemary Harris.
Oh, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. Yeah.
It would exactly be. You want to know what Madame Web is? It's 95-year-old Rosemary Harris. That's who it is. Who I just saw in Law & Order SVU the other night. She was a mean grandma.
Oh, man. That is Madame Web. Madame Web sits in her like spider-like life
throne.
Support unit throne in her rent-controlled apartment and uses her spider cell phone to call up Peter Parker wherever he is and give him psychic advice. That's what he
truly what an insane thing to do. Truly a buck wild. What was Roger Stern thinking?
No idea. And Madame Web had made two off-panel appearances, like calling Spider-Man before this. This is the first time we actually get to see her in her like, who built this apartment for her? She can't even get out of her chair. Everything is automated psychically, but it's like she lives inside Tron or something. It's crazy.
I got so many questions about Madame Web, but do you know who doesn't have questions about Madame Web? Who refuses to do even the littlest bit of due diligence about Madame Web?
Well, I don't know that Black Tom really knows what he's talking about either, but the Juggernaut surely doesn't care.
Juggernaut, a very dumb guy in this comic.
It's great.
He goes to get Madame Web. He's like, well, I'll get a psychic for my boyfriend. These two are very straight in this comic, which is it's always weird when you read a Juggernaut Black Tom thing and you're like, okay, I know you just think Chris Claremont wrote everyone like that, which is fair, but
yeah, you know. You are absolutely right that they are written more like, you know, traditional baddies instead of the couple that they clearly are. However, I did really enjoy the fact that Black Tom calls Juggernaut into his in his yacht office, and Juggernaut just like destroys the stairs walking into the room, and Black Tom's like, "My stairs. What are you doing?" It's hilarious.
In honor of St. Patrick's Day was yesterday. I'm not going to do an Irish accent.
No. Let's not go there. But Juggernaut doesn't want to offend
the Irish.
I guess. He's so impatient that he just like jumps off the side of the boat and like walks underwater into the city. It's crazy.
So on one hand, I don't dislike the idea of Juggernaut's whole thing being walking in a straight line.
Yeah.
I do think that it can get a little dull after a while.
I guess, but it's there. here's what's funny about it is that, like, the bulk of this story really is just Spider-Man trying to slow Juggernaut down and has no ability to it whatsoever. You know, it even gets to the point where he's like, well, you must have a weakness. Oh, what if I take off your helmet? And Juggernaut's like, no way. I just welded this thing on. Like, you're not taking this off.
Which is very dumb.
Yeah.
In a Kane Marco way. It's just, like, I feel like Juggernaut doesn't have the personality I want him to have. Like, the personality that he has when he's written well, he doesn't have that here. He is just a force going in a straight line, getting Madame Web and saying, oh, all those tubes were important. She's going to die now.
Right.
This was a waste of my time. Drops her and walks the other direction.
Yep. Yep. See,
anticlimactic is all get out.
Well, because there is still a really great ending to this story, though. Hold on a sec. I do really enjoy the end of this story because, but before we get there, I want to defend the whole, like, Juggernaut just walking through the city, because it's not all he does. He does cause just, like, absolute destruction wherever he goes. He's smashing through cars in an intersection. At one point, there's this great shot that was like, the same joy that I have for the end of Fast Five when the safe is just like tumbling down the street through banks. There's this great shot where Juggernaut, like, to get Spider-Man off of his back, just walks in and walks out of a store and, like, destroys everything inside of it as he's doing it. Like, it's just silly and I enjoyed it. But the ending of this is also just terrific because Spider-Man cannot figure out how to, and Juggernaut basically, like, does it to himself because he walks into a 4-story deep foundation pour of cement, and you get this great last line where Black Tom is like, well, he's unstoppable. He's going to come out. He has to, right? And then the issue ends because Juggernaut does not appear to be coming out of that cement.
I like the ending.
Yeah.
It's clever. It's fun. Good ending for 1982. Here's my question. Here's my concern with Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut.
Okay.
Why is this clearly one issue story, two issues? Like, there is one issue worth of story here, and they stretch it.
I agree. I also don't care, just because the sight gags are really silly and funny, and it's not like it takes long to read. You know what I mean?
It doesn't take long to read. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, at a certain point, I'm like, okay.
We get it.
Get on with it. Like,
listen, I'm not complaining because that second issue cover is so good, right? With Spider-Man flying into the op art version of Juggernaut's, like, grimacing face. That's a great cover.
I don't like it.
What?
I get the appeal. I get the appeal. Oh,
that's a good one.
I get the appeal. I don't love it.
Okay. Wow.
And that probably says more about me than it does John Romita Jr. But there's something about that cover that it just doesn't resonate with me.
Okay.
It doesn't hit me where I live.
Wow. See, I would have thought, man, you know, as a Juggernaut fan that you'd be down with this, like, cause it's just
I'm a general fan of the Juggernaut. I wouldn't say, like, I'm a super fan of the Juggernaut. Like, I wouldn't say that if Juggernaut was announced to be on the team of X-Men coming out of Krakoa into this new world, that I would be ecstatic or really pumped for that instead of, like, generally, like, really? And bummed? And why does he have a stupid X on his face? That looks dumb. And I know that sometimes Kane does things to look dumb, but he doesn't do things to be that dumb.
Oh, Zach, are we going to do our envelopes this week?
Oh, shoot, I forgot about the envelopes. Folks!
I have to go get mine if we're going to do it.
We're going to do the envelopes in a minute. We're going to cut back to the envelopes in a bit. Take everything I said about X-Men things that may or may not have been announced by the time we're already talking about this. They have been. They've been for a while. We've been sitting on this.
Yes.
We'll get back to that.
Yeah, let's get back to that. Let's rank this story, Adam.
You're right. I forgot. So Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut. I think it's fine. You think it's pretty good.
I think it's... Hold on. I realize it's not like peak comics by any means, but it is fun. Like,
okay, can I...
I had fun reading this.
Here's my issue. I had this built up in my mind because I've been hearing
for years. Yeah.
Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut. It's one of the best Spider-Man stories. It's so good. It's all this stuff. It's fine. It's like, this is what this is what you can offer me, Spider-Man? This is your quality? Get out of here. Get out of here. But do you know where we can't get out of?
Our big old list? Web? Madam Web joke?
Madam Web joke. We can't get out of talking about Madam Web. She's in this. Great for her. She's a non-entity. I can't imagine why they would make a movie about her. Anyway, because the Web of Life has 888 stories on it right now, ranking from best to worst X-Men stories of all time, which this Amazing Spider-Man is, with the best story being the House of X Powers of 10, number 100 being Wolverine the Jungle Adventure, number 200 being Uncanny X-Men 122, Cry for the Children, number 300 being the Hellfire Saga from Wolverine and the X-Men, number 400 being Uncanny X-Men Nation X, number 500 being Bishop's Crossing, number 600 being some random Christmas issue of X-Men, number 700 being The Trial of Juggernaut, 800 being What If Wolverine Enemy of the State, and 888, The Worst X-Men Story of All Time, 2099 World of Tomorrow. Probably better than Nation X at 400.
I noticed that at 248, we have Iceman co-starring in Amazing Spider-Man number 92.
The one where J. Jonah Jameson's like, no, power to the people. We're not going to let this corrupt mayor get out of here. We're going to do all of these politicking stuff. That's great. J. Jonah Jameson in this comic, fine. Not what I want. Has weird hair. He looks kind of weird in this one, right?
A little bit. A little bit. Better or worse than Amazing Spider-Man 92.
It's worse than Amazing Spider-Man 92. That's a better Spider-Man story and a better X-Men story.
I think this is better than 300, the Hellfire Saga from Wolverine and the X-Men.
I mean, probably. That story has a lot. I think of problems with that story before I think of good things with that story. So, yeah.
Okay. All right.
So good art, though. That's got that Nick Bradshaw. That's just nice.
Yeah, yeah. I also don't think it's as good as 268, which is, strangely enough, 268 is Uncanny 268, Madripoor Nights. What a coincidence. That's interesting.
A comic that's probably too low on this list. Madripoor Nights kind of rips.
Yeah.
Have you been reading Chris Claremont's Madripoor Nights series?
I have not, and I
will
not.
Hey, you should pick it up. No, Adam, actually...
Zach, I tried Papa to read Chris, the first issue. Ah, big thumbs down from me.
Papa that, Chris knows what he's doing here. This is a dumb comic. Mm. I love it.
I'm happy Chris is getting paid.
I'm happy Chris is getting paid. All right, so it's not as dumb as his new Extreme X-Men. That one was dumb.
Oof. No, thank you. I couldn't do that.
This is not as good as Age of Apocalypse Weapon X.
Okay. It is probably... Hold on. Trying to look for a floor here.
This is probably better than
that than one
Cyclops shot of, volume 2 number 1 where he fights Baron Zemo for some reason.
I would agree. I think this is better than I like this better than Old Man Lara, Old Woman Lara at 282.
This is probably better than the mini Power Pack Inferno right above that. Is this better or worse than that iBoy issue of Generation X? Probably better, right?
It's better. Yeah. I think my ceiling is probably Orphans of X at 277.
I would put it below that, below Hellions Funny Games.
Okay. And then
probably above X-Men 70 Homecoming. It's probably better than that. That's the one where Maggot eats the bomb that's in Scott's chest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Though I'm going to say Juggernaut, more entertaining in that issue of X-Men when he tries to take all
that's true. He is in that. Yeah.
By litigation. And then he's like, actually, the government took all this. I don't want to deal with it. And he walks away.
So our new 279 is Amazing Spider-Man 229 to 230. Nothing can stop the Juggernaut. And we have yet more Madam Web related X-Men content here. What is our next story, Zach?
Our next story comes to us on the brink of the mutant massacre. It is X-Factor 8 and 9, Freedom Force, starring Julia Carpenter. Adam,
that's right.
What do you, when you think about Julia Carpenter, what do you think of? Julia Carpenter the one that Sydney Sweeney played as?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, in the movie she plays
MAGA icon Sydney Sweeney, as we all know.
Stop it.
You can't show Sydney Sweeney these days because of woke, Adam. She's the anti-woke. An attractive blonde woman? You can't have that these days.
The Sydney Sweeney discourse has gotten really out of hand. It's really wild. Yes, in the movie she plays Julia Cornwall, which is in the comics, which is, you know, before she marries Mr.
Yeah, it's her maiden name. Like, it's not her maiden name. They aren't just being weird. They're actually being like next level. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that actually makes sense. So, you know, she is currently Madam Web. You know, I know you didn't want to talk about it, but Madam
Web. Because they have too many spider women.
Yeah. Madam Web, in her dying moments, transferred her psychic abilities. I guess she can do that to Julia. And now Julia is Madam Web. But I don't think she's paralyzed. Like, she can walk around, I think.
No, she walks around in a trench coat and she's like, look at all these things that are happening to the women of Marvel. And we're like, Madam Web, you ain't never getting over.
No, you're not. But for the purpose of our story here, she is wearing the black and white Spider-Woman outfit, and she has teamed up with the government task force through Val Kooper.
Freedom Force.
Of Freedom Force, formerly the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. It's a weird combination. It never quite made sense to me, but I realized that there's the Val Kooper thing, and I guess that's how it happened. But
I mean, I guess. I don't know why, but I guess. Can we go back one thing?
Please.
Julia Carpenter's costume rules.
Oh, it's great.
It's so much better. People are going to be like, oh, Jessica Drew, she's the best Spider-Woman. And I like Jessica Drew comics. I do not care for her Spider-Woman outfit. I never have. It was great when they updated it and made it a cool motorcycle jacket. And it's weird that anyone was like, no, that sucks. Let's go back to the old costume.
Here's the other thing.
The one we had discourse on.
This is the other thing I want to say about the costume, is that they do the costume in the movie for a hot second. Like, there is one flash forward scene and they do show you all of the characters in their costumes. And it just blows my mind that Sony would rather have these characters run around without their costumes on for 2 hours, as opposed to pouring liquid latex onto Sydney Sweeney. And like, that's not the more appealing choice for
because audiences. Of woke. Stop Adam, it. It's because Stop of woke.
It. Stop it. Stop it. You.
I'm sorry. Not Jessica Drew. Julia Carpenter's costume, thigh high white boots,
mm-hmm.
The Venom costume up top.
Yep.
Arm length white gloves, like past the elbows, and then a like one of the headband things for a mask with the face open and the hair open like you would have in the 90s. It's great. A good look.
Oh, it's great.
In continuity, they're like, actually, that's what Spider-Man based the symbiote suit off of. And I don't know enough about Venom to know what that means now, but subconsciously, the robot machine Battle World that gave him some new clothes.
Wild that that's how that came out, right? So these two issues are X-Factor 8 and 9. This is Wheezy doing the writing. We get at least pencils on 8 from Silvestri and inks from Joseph Rubinstein. And then on 9, it goes back to Terry Shoemaker. So Zach, you and I were talking before we got on the air that this is like a huge transition point for this book. Because Wheezy had just taken over a couple of issues ago and really is starting to find the footing of what the book is going to become when Walt joins her.
Yeah, they're past the first 5 issues where the book's bad.
Yeah.
Or first 6 issues, excuse me. And then Wheezy jumps in, and really you could count the glowworm and whatever stuff before this, but I don't because I didn't want to read that again. Cause that one's a bad issue, Wheezy.
Yeah.
It's not very good. But 8 and 9 have Cyclops and Jean starting off by like trying to sort out what happened with the weird glowworm stuff. That was just a mutant they found. It was just
there was giving off radiation. So they're cleaning up the radiation
mutant.
Yep.
And they have like this big conversation where they're like, hey, Scott, so you're married and you abandoned your son and wife. And also she looks like me. Scott, yeah.
Here's a photo.
What's up? He's like, it should have been you. She's like, this is a weird secret you kept from me, Mr. Summers. I don't know how I feel about it, which is the appropriate reaction.
Well, it's almost like Wheezy is reacting to the pitch of the book. This is what I didn't say before we started recording because I wanted to save this for the show. It really feels like Wheezy is looking at the entire exterminator X factor concept that the book is pitched with, right? Because for folks who don't remember early X Factor, and we haven't talked about this in a long time, the whole original premise was that they were posing as humans who were basically mutant Ghostbusters. They were coming in and like saving people from, but they were really just doing it by, you know, pretending to be people with powers or not powers. They had like power packs like Ghostbusters. And then
at the same time, they would come in, they would do a false flag operation where
right.
they were the superheroes and they were the mutants that X Factor was stopping.
Never made sense.
It was a bad plan from the beginning.
It's a terrible pitch. It's a terrible
God bless your soul. Weezy in this starts to get into, hey, what an insane idea this was. Because multiple characters are like,
why are we doing starting? This?
This doesn't make any sense, right?
No.
Also, why? What's the deal with Warren's one friend who's like here now?
Yeah, because the focal point of this issue is Rusty and Skids. So Rusty has already been with X Factor. He's under.
Weezy can't fix Rusty.
There's a warrant out.
She can't make me care about Rusty.
No, but does a
Fire
good job
Fist from Deadpool 2.
Does a good job of at least pairing him up with Skids, and you know there's like something there, right? Like
I love Skids. Skids did nothing wrong.
Right, great fashion. You know, cool.
Love her to death.
So. Instead of our normal like X Factor, which has been very bland so far, these two issues are both filled with great soap opera stuff like you were just talking about and super action because it's basically a battle in Central Park between Freedom Force and X Factor. And it works. I think it's a lot of fun. Along the way, we also get, some Morlock action. And it's actually the first time that Artie meets Leech.
Beautiful.
Really,
love it
really,
so much.
Oh,
I saw those two. I was like, these boys, these are good boys. These two are the best, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe Artie is the only good thing that came out of that time of X Factor, those first five issues. You could argue Frenzy, but no, Frenzy's not good because of those. She's good in spite of those.
She's good because of, you know, later stories.
Literally anyone else doing something with Frenzy. not that one.
Yeah. So Spider-Woman is a key part of the attack strategy here because she fires not webbing, but some kind of like
psychic web.
Is it psychic?
Energy?
What is
energy
it?
Webs?
Yeah.
They're psionic. They are psionic webbing.
I don't know what that means. It just, I guess she can control it with her mind.
Oh, she uses psychokinetic energy and she can bind ambient free floating molecule. That's nothing.
Wow. That sounds like
this is insane.
Marvel nonsense.
No, she makes psychic webs because Adam, as you know,
mm-hmm.
her web connects them all.
That's what I heard. So, it does seem that Spider-Woman is going to be successful in containing Rusty and Skids. It doesn't work because Skids has her force field powers and is able to slip out of that psychokinetic energy. Destiny is walking around going, I see nothing but death here. It's like, calm down. You should be more worried about the entity or something. Like, this is not really a big deal.
Well, I mean, to be fair, there is about to be a literal mutant massacre.
Yes. That part does make sense.
She's noticing that. Also, we may have counted X Factor number 9 in our mutant massacre coverage years ago, and to which I say, it's our show.
It doesn't matter. We definitely didn't really cover 8. And if we did cover 9, like you said like earlier, we probably just covered it in passing, you know.
Also, to be clear, this is so important. It's our show. We can do what we want. And also, we wanted to do a Man and Web episode. And this was the only way I could justify it by having at least one actual X-Men story.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. I mean, I think the Spider-Man counts, you know, because Juggernaut's in it. That makes it a Spider-Man. I mean,
it's fine.
Story.
Again,
you know,
why are we? We need to get rid of the cop in our mind because we're policing our own podcast.
No one cares. We can do whatever we want. You know,
hold on, Adam. I've been blackmailed no less than 3 times about X-Men. People care about X-Men.
All right, that's true. That's true. Anyway, this was fun. I really enjoy. I do wish that Silvestri penciled both issues because
his, I do too.
His issue, even though you know it's Rubenstein doing the inks, it's so much more dynamic than what we get in the second issue when we go back to Shoemaker. But it's still fun. I enjoyed it. It you know has the same kind of energy that Wheezy did a really great job on this book with, and you know that we look back with fondly. It's not hitting the heights of what it will with Walt, but
no, but it's like you can see how she's gonna get there.
Yes.
And then Mutant Massacre is gonna hit, and then things are gonna really start to turn around for this book, and there's gonna be like there is gonna be a spell of issues on this, like a straight up run up until Inferno, where this book is just kind of hitting and hitting and hitting. And also there's the infectious stuff, but then it's hitting again. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's good. I like this good comic. That's those, what it is.
Those Simonsons, just real, real great. So
both Walt and Wheezy Simonson, legends yeah. in their own right.
So this is clearly better. We have the original first couple of issues of X-Factor very low on this list.
Well, yeah, because those are... Not good. Those are bad.
Those are bad. And I think the highest X Factor issue that we have on our list is probably 27. No, Follow the Mutants is all the way up at 30.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
I don't think
this it's not that good.
It's not as good as Inferno.
Is this better than The Secret Life of Eva Belle?
Oh, that's interesting. Where do we end up putting that? 200 and
232.
232. I think Secret Life of Eva Belle is better than this.
Okay, but this is better than X Factor 16 No Dominion from the Peter David one, where he introduces the pastor,
yeah.
who I like.
Okay. But I would still, bear with me here. I would still.
I'm listening. Maybe and so is Louise Simonson. So choose your words. Choose your words, buddy.
Yeah, because now we're in a difficult spot. Is this better or worse than the first two issues of the Rob and Nicieza's X-Force 1 and 2? Whew.
Is it, Adam? Is it?
Yeah, it is better.
I was actually going to say that. I was just gonna hold you over and be like, no, I kind of agree that X-Force is probably better. But
well, what do you want to do? Which is better? I don't know. They're about the same.
They're about the same. But X-Force doesn't have Artie Leach or Skids.
No.
Skids in that, actually? Hold on. No, she's not.
She's not. All right, so our new 233 is starring Julia Carpenter, Spider-Woman, X-Factor, Volume 1, numbers 8 and 9. All right, we got one last one, and this one's a stretch. But we do think it counts for a very specific reason. Zach, what is this last story?
It's Alias 16 through 21.
Alias, okay.
AKA Jessica Jones.
AKA Jessica Jones, the early 2000s.
This is called The Underneath, by the way.
Brian yes. Michael Bendis, Michael Gatos, illustrated story with covers by David Mack. Occasional flashbacks by Mark Bagley.
This was the first Marvel Max comic.
Mm-hmm.
And that means they could say cusses.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And Bendis, coming from like, he was a crime writer. Like, that's what he did. It's like him and Brubaker and, like, I think Greg Pak all kind of came up in the same. Oh, no, Greg Rucka, excuse me. Pak's around that same time, but he didn't come up through the same channels. But, like, him and Rucka and Brubaker all were of the same mold, and it feels that way when you read this comic. Like, it makes sense. I'm going to say right now, before anyone says this isn't an X-Men story, and I can't hear you because, again, hermetically sealed, I did confuse this story with the one where the girl lies about being a mutant as a runaway because she thinks it would be cool if she was a mutant. I did mix up this story and that one. Sue me.
But hold on a sec. You can't have mixed those two up too much because the reason that we have chosen this one is because the mystery of this arc involves the other star of Madam Web, Maddie Franklin, who shows up in Jessica Jones' apartment, breaks out of a window, clearly like messed up out of her mind.
She's strung out.
Jessica Jones is hired by Maddie Franklin's adopted family, J. Jonah Jameson, to go find her.
Now, I don't know why J. Jonah Jameson doesn't talk about his Spider-Man daughter all that often.
Just, you know, he's trying to do a good thing, but he's not a fan of costume. Well, he doesn't realize that she's costumed, at least according to this story. The J. Jonah's wife knows, but they're not ready to tell him, so he doesn't, like, flip his lid.
Listen, fair.
Yeah. So before we get into story, I just want to real quick acknowledge the fact that I had never read Alias before. I had seen the Netflix Jessica Jones show, which I did enjoy. I thought the first season was terrific. Second season, not so much.
There were three seasons of it. Did you also not watch the third season?
There's a third season after Defenders?
I also did not watch the third season.
Jones. I got up to Defenders and that was terrible. So, okay. So I had a very knee-jerk reaction to this arc, which was that I did not think that it was very good.
Right.
I was looking at the, you know, the max mature rating, and I was very irritated by the what I thought was very unnaturalistic cursing, you know, the what I thought were very forced, like, sex scenes that are in here. There is some sort of like passing homophobia, some like jokes that are bordering on racism, you know, and it all seemed to me,
to be clear, this came out in 2002.
Yes, but it all seemed to me like early aughts, like we're pushing the envelope type stuff. Now,
yeah,
I did share this opinion on the Slack, and what I was greeted with was a great response from my one and only, the very wise Dr. Anna Papard, who recommended that I go and read all of it because she held the series in very high regard. And right. So what I did over this weekend was not just read this arc, but I read all of Alias, volume one. And I can tell you, this book is very good. This is a very, very good comic book. What I will say is, having read the first volume of it, this particular arc is the worst arc of
it is
the run. So it is. My initial reaction still stands a little bit, but now that I have the context for what comes before and after it, what's happening here in some of these moments that I had knee-jerk reactions to makes so much more sense because Bendis is doing an excellent job of seeding storylines. So I just want to get that out of the way. Let's get into the meat of it, because there is a reason that despite this being a Madam Web-tied Maddie Franklin, why is this an X-Men story, Zach?
So Jessica Jones does her Jessica Jones thing, does her searching around for people, gets to a club, has to dress herself up to get into the club because otherwise she looks too frumpy to get in, which I think is a very character defining and funny moment because she is so mad that she has to like oversex herself to get into this place.
Yeah.
She gets in, finds out that there is a dirtbag drug dealer that is using Maddie Franklin's like bodily tissue to create mutant growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before we get into this, I just want to be very clear because we just did that Dazzler story recently where they were doing, Bendis has the same thing happened to Dazzler.
Yes.
Adam, we were talking off air. Maddie Franklin, not a mutant, right?
Not from what I understand. No,
she got the wizard powers that Norman Osborn thought he was going to get in the Gathering of Five. Instead, he got insanity.
Yeah, for listeners who don't know how Maddie Franklin got her powers, just rewind for a second. So there's this like meeting of the minds, right? Of these five people, including Norman Osborn.
It's Norman Osborn. It should be Maddie Franklin's real dad. And instead she steals his like artifact, his like talisman or whatever that he has to bring to the Gathering of Five. It's them, Madam Web, Morris Maxwell, who we all know who Morris Maxwell is, and we all know who Gregory Hurd is, right?
No, but continue, please.
they're just dudes.
Okay.
They're John Byrne dudes.
Mm.
They do a wizard ritual where one of them gets power, one gets knowledge, one gets immortality, one gets insanity, and one gets death.
Amazing.
She gets power, and her powers are being Spider-Man.
It's wild.
The Gathering of Five's not good. I don't know what to tell. It's what ends the initial run of Amazing Spider-Man. Not what I would call a good story or choice to make, but it is what they did.
So from what, here's what her wiki entry says. It says that she's human, but it also says that she is a magic-based mutate, that the powers granted to her by the Gathering of Five make her a mutate by magic?
No, that's people being stupid. She has magic powers, and Bendis was like, well, we can still make mutant growth hormone from it. And listen.
Man, that guy likes his MGH. You think Bendis is...
He invented it.
Is he inhaling MGH for, like, you know...
Bendis just wanted a... Bendis, being a crime guy, wanted a drug.
Yes.
The mutant growth hormone was his drug. He had the owl use it in Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
He had Jessica Jones try and get into this. He had it happen in X-Men. Like, MGH is everywhere.
Boy.
What this is a good story, I think, at its core of... One, it's a little long. It's six issues, and that's probably too long for this story. But it does have a lot of Jessica, like... She's not even, like, really hired for this case. She feels bad for Jonah. And, like, that... Well, more she feels bad that a girl has gone missing. And she can't... Even though she hates Jonah, she sees that, like, he actually cares for this girl. And she tells herself that... Yeah, and he'll know that I did it, and he hates me, and then that'll eat him up. But really, she's lying to herself, because while she is not a superhero and will never be a superhero again, she still wants to help people, and she still wants to have people avoid the kind of trauma that she had to go through. And she sees a lot of herself in Maddie. And we, the readers, we know that something has happened to her, but we don't know what has happened to her yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot, like, there's a lot of dynamics there. I get what he's doing. I also get that he wants to do a Jessica Drew team up, because Bendis loves Jessica Drew so much. And in fact, Jessica Jones, one of the original ideas that became Jessica Jones was a Jessica Drew story that he wanted to do, with her being like a private investigator.
Mm-hmm.
And then just wanting to change the character enough that that no longer made sense, but he still liked the name Jessica. And he's like, well, two people can have the same name. That's not weird. It's not. It is funny when they both show up together. They're like, you're Jessica.
Yeah. Oh, you're a private detective? I'm a private detective. You know, it's
who would have thought?
Yeah. So there is that added context of the earlier story, which involves J. Jonah hiring. This doesn't happen in this story. It's a really smart one issue standalone story where Jonah hires Jessica to find out who Spider-Man is. And she basically uses the retainer to go off and, like, feed the homeless, or, you know, provide for children in, like, a hospital who are suffering from AIDS, and does all of this charity work on Jonah's dime, so that she's not doing what he asked him to do, and he can't stop her and make a story out of it, because that's embarrassing to him. And it's,
you can I tell you what my favorite part about that is?
Yeah. Which part?
That story is told essentially like, it's told in like a very text heavy form, where it's not really dialogue in the story. It's like a running narrative on the side of big, like, art pieces. And they do that in like one of the first pages that involves Jonah and laying this out. I love Gatos in this, but what Gatos and Bendis do is they mirror the format of that one shot in this story for a minute, just so you can build that narrative connection. And I like that.
There's some really intelligent art decisions done throughout. One of the things that did turn me off on this story was that in the final confrontation where they finally get Maddie back, one of the things that Brian is doing very intelligently, I want to give him a lot of credit for this. He does a very smart job of using Jessica to talk about an outsider perspective of what it would be like in a real world if there were Avengers, if there were Fantastic Four, if you had been involved in this and you're not anymore, and how much of an outsider Jessica feels about that, and what the culture of those organizations are, which are very male. And throughout the series, there's some really smart things like that. In this particular arc, it gets kind of dumbed down, because the big culminating thing is a joke on Speedball, and it's not funny, and it's not insightful, and it's just dumb. And I was like, Brian, come on, man. Like, once I read everything around it, I was like, this is just like,
he does that from time to time. He does similar things with D-Man at one point in his either the Pulse or in New Avengers. I think it is in the Pulse, which sucks because I love D-Man.
Yeah.
But like, and Bendis would own up to that stuff in the future. He's like, yeah, you know what? I probably crapped on a bunch of people's stuff that they really liked just because I was a punk kid.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I wouldn't have done that if I were to go back and do these stories again. And I think that's fair. I want to give credit to Michael Gaidos in this because I really like, it takes a very specific type of artist to make so many talking heads work.
I
think he really does.
Yeah. I was talking about the, Anna and I had a really long conversation about this because, you know, she's written about the series. I had just read it. So we're having a really long conversation about this yesterday. And, you know, I was talking about how Michael relies on, and I see this in the artwork of, I think it's Alex Maleev, who does Daredevil around the same time.
Yep.
And there's a lot of, I draw one head and then I copy and paste it and I copy and paste it. And in Daredevil's, Bendis's Daredevil, that kind of bothered me because it felt a little cheap. But here, it doesn't bother me as much because a lot of the times the talking heads are in service of a really smart written conversation. You know, this arc doesn't do that as well. You know,
not other as ones well.
Do this it is... a lot better, but I overall, I think Michael is doing an incredible job and varies his style, you know, and it really works when they flash to other artists. So all those instincts,
I love
are
that
really great.
When they flash to superhero stuff, they flash to Mark Bagley.
Yeah.
Who is probably at this time the most like Marvel looking guy
yep.
out there, and also a big Bendis partner with Ultimate Spider-Man, which is such a different flavor from Alias. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really smart. I think this book definitely needed an update. Like at a certain point, it's like, okay, or it needed a new break. Like this was the arc to say, we probably don't have that many investigation stories in us. Like we're probably on our last legs on doing that particular thing. Let's move the story further. And that's what the next arc is. It's getting into the big narrative heft of Alias.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. This isn't the best Alias. Go back and read Alias.
Yeah. And
pretty good.
And we're not talking about Maddie Franklin because unfortunately she really is kind of unconscious through the vast majority of this story. She doesn't even remember breaking into Jessica's office or I guess it's her apartment. You know,
it would be a frustrating and annoying thing if this wasn't a story where nearly every single character is a woman. Like
mm-hmm.
you can have that when you have that's the thing about like fridging or anything like that is like, when it's the only thing, then it's an issue. When you have a wide variety of characters who are doing so many different things that you have representation, then it's less of an issue. Then you can be like, yeah, but she's not the only woman in the story. She's right. not just, yeah.
Well, and at the time that this being written, the amount of female representation, I know it's a male writer, I know it's a male artist, but even just like token representation in this era was extremely rare. So to have yeah. something that's this grounded and this realistic and trying to, you know, tell this perspective with this cast, it's kind of special for its time. You know, it's yes. unique in that way. So I stand by the fact that I didn't love this arc, especially because we had just read the Dazzler thing last week. And I'm like, God dang it. Like,
Brian, you've done Brian, it again, boy.
You're plagiarizing yourself here, man. Like, what are you doing? And I realize I'm reading it in reverse. I don't think this is as strong as the other two things that we talked about this week.
It's not, though. I'd probably put literally every other Alias or Jessica Jones book above this.
Oh, easily.
I would say, though, Marvel Knights X-Men is at 296, which is playing with a lot of similar things, I think less successfully overall. But that's kind of the area I'm looking at. Like, this is probably better than Negative Zone War, right?
Yeah, that's at
that's 303.
Yeah, I think we're probably in, okay. So that's going to be our like little window here. I don't think this is
those first. You're highlighting the first two Resurrection issues of Generation X, a book we both love, but does start rough.
Yeah, I think this might be better than that. You know. And what is Excalibur 51?
Oh, it's worse than Excalibur 51. And if Brian Michael Bendis was on this podcast again, he would probably agree. That's the one where there's the dinosaur Excalibur planet.
Okay, so this should be our new 298.
Yeah, this will be our new 298.
All right, great. You know, I think we, you know, we really braved the web. You know, we avoided Queens, you know, because I've never been shot at in Queens, but, you know, and I don't
you're
have
making an... movie references that I don't understand. I don't. Here's what I know about Madame Web. I've been told that her web connects us all. Mm-hmm. I've been told there's a lot of vehicular manslaughter that Madame Web does.
Well, that's because all they do is drive around in a stolen taxi and an ambulance for the whole movie.
Very funny. I've also heard, and spoiler alert for the next 10 seconds, people, I've heard that they have the final fight in a firework factory and one of the fireworks blows up in her eyes and that's why she's blind.
That's pretty much what happens. Well, and also the corporate sponsor, the corporate sponsor of the movie is Pepsi. So there's multiple scenes where people are either handed a Pepsi or like, you know, drinking a Pepsi, and the entire culminating fight sequence when the fireworks are going off takes place on a neon Pepsi sign. And the reason that the villain is defeated is because one of the letters from the sign falls on him and crushes him.
They don't make them like they used to, folks.
Jesus Christ, this is a terrible movie. I just, real quick, I want everybody to know, if you did not see this, because not everybody follows me on Letterboxd or Instagram where I do post my Letterboxd reviews, but I just want to read my Letterboxd review of Madame Web, which I gave 1 star. And I said, when someone is like, quote unquote, God, this tastes terrible, you have to try it. You shouldn't. So, Zach, do not watch Madame Web. Save yourself
I am
2 hours. Listeners,
I
don't
am watch absolutely.
Web. Like, you're
going to
be thinking.
I'm absolutely going to.
You're like, haha, we're so funny. We're going to go watch this movie. And then you're going to be 2 hours later, you're gonna be like, God damn it. I wish I didn't watch that.
I'm going to do drugs for the first time in my life and watch Madame Web, Adam. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a drug and I'm going to watch Madame Web. That's what's going to happen.
You're going to fall asleep is what you're going to do if you do that.
Listen, you're saying that like that's a bad alternative.
Great
like,
option.
I love I'm in my 30s. I love falling asleep during movies. My favorite. Mm. But do you know what else is my favorite? Our great supporters on patreon.com/battleoftheatom. If you would like to be like them, you can avoid us doing more episodes loosely based around X-Men and instead base it firmly around X-Men. I know our listeners have got to be enjoying the Madame Web content that we are providing months after the movie came out. Go on over there. Give us $5. We'll do a thing. Line's pretty short. As long as you don't request a comic that we just really don't feel like reading at this moment, you're fine. And if you do, we're going to make fun of that comic and then put other things around it that we would rather read.
That's how we work. We're having fun here.
It's one for them, one for us. That's right. That's what it is. That's what it is. But we love all of our Patreon supporters. Y'all are the best. You make this fun. So, folks, we have a special treat for you today.
Ooh.
Adam and I decided a while ago. This was my idea.
It's a great idea.
That as the Krakoa Age was ending, and that there was going to be some mysterious new writers and artists involved, that we would send each other a letter, a postmarked letter before the announcement, and it's sealed. We're going to open it on camera. You will hear the opening.
Yep.
Of what our predictions are. So I have Adam's prediction right here. He has my prediction. Now, yes. I'm going to read the postmark. Yours was postmarked on February 7th. When was mine postmarked, Adam?
Yours was, you sent me yours way before I did. Yours is from January 10th.
Got it. So folks, this is in the past. These are our predictions, and I thought it would be fun to see how right or how wrong we got it. So I'm going to open Adam's first. We're going to start with Adam's prediction.
Just wait. Before you open it, I have a couple questions because I only guessed writer. Yes. I only guessed writer. Did you also just guess writer, or did you guess artist as well?
I went with a whole thing. But
oh, you have we'll a whole thing. Okay,
I have a whole thing.
Okay, all right. I don't know how much
it's a multimedia whole, production.
I don't know how much of a thing I have.
I got a big thing in there.
Okay, okay. I'm very excited. Now I only have one more question, and that is, if is this a bet? Like, if one of us gets it right, do you like you just, win something, or is it just fun for our listeners?
I think it's going to be fun for all of our listeners.
All right, let's do it.
Biggest thing. Also, do you want something? Like, I can
no, not really. I just fine. I'm just excited to open this envelope that's been sitting on my counter for like.
Oh yeah, I sealed mine. I sealed mine with a Battle of the Atom sticker.
I don't think I've ever flipped it over until right now and realized there's a shiny holographic Battle of the Atom sticker on the back. I was like, wow.
I keep my stickers right next to my envelopes. That's a real thing.
All right, let's get that good ASMR, and here we go.
You hear that?
I do.
That's Adam's envelope. Okay, this is Adam's prediction. And it says, Dan Slott. Just kidding, Gail Simone. So he did write it in Comic Sans, which is upsetting. So Adam was right that it was Gail Simone. I don't know who could have predicted that. Are you excited about Gail Simone X-Men?
I am very happy and excited that Gail Simone and Eve Ewing in particular are getting a crack at the books.
Eve Ewing, who you weren't there that day, were you at C2E2 2020?
I don't think so. Cause you,
where we met it. We met Eve Ewing in Artist Alley walking back. And the reason I didn't know that I was meeting Eve Ewing at the time, I said, hey, to a dude whose shirt I recognize. I said, my friend made that shirt. And it was one of your shirts that have Jubilee holding up a sign that says all the best X-Men are women.
Yes.
And it was the guy who was with Eve Ewing. And I said, wait, you're Dr. Eve Ewing.
Love it.
And then said, oh, that's great. Oh, my friend made that. Oh, that's so cool. Oh, yeah, I love your stuff. Oh, yeah, it was nice. Happy for Eve Ewing. I think Kitty Pryde being a barista is probably one of the most insane things.
Mechanics, too.
That's Buck Wild.
I have to put...
Happy for them.
Yeah, I'm happy for them. I'm happy for all... I'm legitimately, this is no sarcasm. I want it to be good. I want everybody involved to like do their best work and for it to be good. I just separate from that. So far, the pitches have been underwhelming for me. And I'm also very biased because I'm so like, I have such great memories of this particular era. So anyway, let me open your envelope because I know.
Well, can I just get my thoughts out we're doing thoughts?
Please.
I've made my thoughts on Gail Simone's writing clear. Just not for me. That's fine. So personally, it doesn't hit for me. I like Eve Ewing, but it's been uneven. And then Jed McKay. I like Jed McKay. Jed McKay's superhero pilled to the core. He's a cape boy, and I'm happy for him. But I want more. And no one's doing a good job selling me on this book. Also, I don't particularly love Ryan Stegman's art. I get it, but he's not my favorite. So it's throwing me off. I'm taking like a break from X-Men, like not forever, but like if I catch up on stuff on Marvel Unlimited, it's not that big of a deal, right? It's just not.
Listen, we're all going through something.
I need
right
a
now.
Detox. I need a detox. Yeah. Is what I need.
So a little deep breath will be fine.
I need a Hox Pox detox.
Yes, I love that. All right, let me. Oh man. Like I'm at the Oscars. All right. And
all right, what is it?
Wow.
Adam, can you describe what's in that envelope, please?
Oh, okay. Hold on a sec. Now I'm trying to figure out who the artist is because I know I recognize this art style.
Can you describe what's in that envelope?
All right.
That has been sitting in your house since January.
Yeah, I mean, this envelope has been sitting like within, you know, within my home where my child lives. This is a. All right, I just unfolded this. It has an inscription. and some hearts, and it says, "Lots of love, Zach, the bad boy of X-Men podcasting, Jenkins." And Zach, there doesn't appear to be any guesses here as to the new era. There is just a full page drawing of Wolverine walking away from, I guess, a motel, and he's naked. Like,
just hanging brain, isn't he? Just right out there.
He is. He certainly is. And I,
in vivid detail,
swear to God, I know who this artist is. Why can't I think of who this is? Is this the guy that did that X-Force arc where Omega Red gets the tiger?
No, it's not. It's not. Who's this? Rico Renzi.
Oh, okay.
That is the final page of the cannot be found online anymore fan comic Rico Renzi did of Wolverine Goes on Spring Break.
Amazing.
Anyway,
I've never seen that before. So was your guess that it was Renzi who was going to be on the books, or is this just
this entire thing was a plot to send you a picture of Wolverine's penis. That's all this was. I've been running a long con for a while, my man.
Wouldn't it be amazing if somehow I had like the wherewithal to send you a nude superhero just to like really?
I feel like that's what friendship is. It's sending pictures of different superhero penises to one another.
Instead, I sent you Dan Slott's name in an envelope, hoping to elicit a small chuckle. But
I mean, that's more of like an oh no chuckle than anything else.
Yeah, that's why I wrote it. That was fun. Thank you, Zach.
I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I said that.
All right.
I thought about that. Adam, I thought about that and then immediately DM'd you and said, we should do this, Adam.
It's a great master plan, my friend.
I'm committed to bits you couldn't possibly comprehend, Adam.
Oh. All right, folks, you can
What do you got going on besides now framing that?
Yikes. I don't know where I'm putting this. You folks can always follow me on social media, Adam Reck on Instagram and Blue Sky, and on Twitter, Arthur Stacey. Zach, what are we doing next week?
I honestly, Adam, I didn't prepare that far. We're talking about times when Dazzler has died.
Oh, interesting. The death of Dazzler.
I gotta figure out the times that Dazzler died. I'll be right back.
Well, you don't have to.
But until then, folks, I'll forget about it until next week.
No, we'll do it. I'll forget. But we gotta wrap up the show.
Oh, yeah. Until then, folks, this has been Battle of the Atom. We hope you survived the experience. Get it!